2024, happy new year to you all. It is episode 328. It is crazy to me that we have been around for this many episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. We are almost at a year's worth of content of us driveling about absolutely nothing. And today, our special guest is Yiska's new addiction, Against the Storm. This is not sponsored. We wish it would be great. Yeah. You know, devs of game, if you want to just toss me a copy, I'd love to sponsor it or, you know, get a free plug. But there's really nothing going on. So we figured we'd just hang out and watch Yiska play, but also chat about Overwatch and some of the exciting prospects or not so exciting prospects of the coming year. So here we are. Yiska, how's the new year treating you? How is the holidays? How are things?
Oh, I've been enjoying like holiday, but I got some unfortunate real life news just like in family, so taking care of that, but otherwise like trying to enjoy shitty weather in Germany. We had like a pretty big storm brewing, and like wind speeds are ridiculous at the moment. And
yeah, I saw in Discord like you and I think it was Jasmine talking about like just like the weather is just horrendous out there.
Yeah, it's been a wild trip so far. Like last night I had like documents on my table, and my window was closed, and the wind hit the window in an angle that it lifted it off a little bit. Great isolation, by the way, but I'm also not paying a lot of rent. And my documents actually flew off the table.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was. Interesting experience. So you know what my heating bill looks like, especially in the current, you know, world political climate.
Yeah, okay. So you're also referencing the fact that like Germany has been like crazy.
It's okay. Like my heating is usually not. I'm a gamer, dude. Like, my PC just...
It's heated, yeah. 100%. That's the same thing here. It's, like, my room is on the side of the house. It gets, like, the most wind, so it's, like, always cold. Right. But then in the summer, it's still hot enough that, like, the heat of the PC makes it, like, unbearable. And it's, like, I'm sweating. This is gross. I am gross. I am a filth-ridden human, and I have played a little too much video game. And I need to reevaluate my life.
Yeah.
That's the summer. The winter is actually kind of nice because the PC heats things up. But no, I feel that. And yeah, holidays were very much the same. Very, very family driven, hanging out, spending time with people, spending time with the loved ones and whatnot. Speaking of loved ones, we wouldn't be able to do 328 episodes without our little Christmas elves.
The segue, the cut.
So thank you so much to our Patreon producers that are keeping the show afloat. If you can't support monetarily, do go on over to iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast, download it, do all the algorithm stuff. It helps a ton. But thank you so much to Battlecry, Refine, Bean, Bronze, Babu, How, Picasso, Lotion, Porches, Amy, Rexane, Volumel, and Sugar High. They're YouTube members. I'm DRW, Brother, Adam L, Ice Angel, Fire Element 6, and AK. As you can see, this is reminiscent of a Zoomer's TikTok feed where we have a game being played below us to increase viewer retention. Why is that? Because we didn't know what else to put in the third window, and Eric is still on holiday. So here we are. We're also we're just playing games and chatting, okay? It's a real casual Wednesday.
For sure. I'm already getting self-conscious. I already made two bad choices, Joe. Nobody judge me. I'm counting on nobody of our audience having played this. Knowing our audience, they probably have, and now we're deeply judging. So, yes, I understand. I thought I had Beavis. I don't have Beavis. Okay, tough luck. Tough it out.
It's getting worse. Tough luck. No Beavers here. You know where there may or may not be resource gatherers. You know who's gathering resources. That's the real news. The Savvy Gaming Group is gathering resources.
Segues, look at you.
Boom, look at you. 2024 is the year of segues for me, okay? The Esports World Cup, if you haven't necessarily kept your eyes or ears down on the pulse of esports news, the Saudi-backed Savvy Gaming Group is looking to hold an esports World Cup. No, not the Overwatch World Cup, but more of a collection of games. It seems to be more of like a successor to like the Gamers 8 tournaments that were going on in years past. And Jacob Wolf just published a report that League of Legends was tapped to be one of the games featured. Surprising nobody. It's one of the biggest esports in the world. Like, no, you know, again, that's not any shade to Jacob. Like, great reporting. But yes, like, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess that kind of bleeds over into our neck of the woods, especially with how much money the, you know, how much money, but also interest has been kind of developed in Saudi Arabia with, you know, some of the Overwatch teams that are out there, you know, Twisted Minds coming out and doing extremely well. And some, I think there was a recent tournament just out there right now, and the name's escaping me, but a toss up softball question to you, Yiska, you know, is this something that we can expect to also potentially tap Overwatch as a game to be featured at this World Cup of sorts?
So I think I wouldn't be surprised. It's also just in order to fill in folks on what actually happened, right? Like Jacob Wolf published a report that Riot Games had communicated to their employees that something like this has been being tapped, so to speak, for a possibility in order to get this on the road and find ways to make this feasible or sensible or if it fits and whatnot. Now, the context of this is that it hits 3 years after the NEOM deal, okay? NEOM is a project also by the Saudi Arabian Investment Fund, which is basically like this gigantic city. It went through various iterations, don't nail me on that, but like I think it's the wall thing is NEOM now, I think, from what I remember. If not, yeah, but I don't think that detail is too important. That deal was made with the LEC, the European League of Legends League. And then Talent and the community rebelled, and that deal was pulled. That was 3 years ago, right? It feels like the frog has boiled. And in order... This is almost like a little bit like a controlled leak, I think, is my reading of how Riot handled this. Because if you put this out to all your employees, you have to assume this is something that will go to the press. I think that's a direct thing. In saying that you're currently looking if it's possible, right? Mm-hmm. You're testing the waters. You're trying to get like a public temperature check where everyone is, where the Overton window lies with folks in the esports industry. And to be fair, from what I've read so far, I'm not sure if I'm sensing headwinds for this. And this sort of mild reaction, I think the Reddit thread on our League of Legends had like 700 upvotes or something, right?
Sure.
Might just like make them think, okay, this is fair enough.
This is fine. And
let's move along. So that's an interesting thing. The other thing is, if I'm not mistaken, the system there is very different to what we're used to because it has a misleading title. It's called World Cup, but it's not about World Cup stuff in the soccer or in the Overwatch way. It's not about national teams. It is more like the Champions League. Now, what I would need to get clarification on, and keep in mind, you're catching me on the break, I have been trying to get as far away from esports as possible. But from what I understand, the current setup is that teams such as Cloud9, such as Gen.G or whatever teams would compete at this and field teams in various esports titles. So they would be invited and then they would field their teams under those brands and they would probably do it in multiple teams. Now, if they just invite like 8 orcs and those 8 orcs have to field teams in every single of their nominated games, something I don't know. It's something that it sounds like could be the case, but I'm not too sure if that's actually going to be the thing. Now, with that context, given the public's interest in Overwatch, right? And given that we already had the Saudi E-League stuff happening,
right,
it would not surprise me if Overwatch was a game that was being looked at. But it is important to know that it was not part of Gamers 8, as far as I know. We just had Saudi E-League. The Overwatch League was still running. There's a good reason not to have it at Gamers 8, right? Which was this gigantic tournament that sort of now is like the preceding tournament.
Right.
So, like, that might be speaking against or for. But yeah, like, it seems like increasingly likely, without having like insight into the matter at hand,
sure,
that this could be moving forward. Or that, let me phrase, okay, this is where it gets dangerous playing games while doing this. It would not surprise me if that was to happen, right?
Yeah.
Now, whether or not Overwatch even has the pull still to get there is another thing. Also, the Overwatch community, as I perceive it, would probably be the community that would have the
most pushback, right?
Most pushback. We will see. I cannot really look into the minds of this community anymore. I tried in the past. I thought I knew what kind of things
sure.
the community cared about, and I missed hilariously on multiple occasions. So I'm reserving judgment on that one, but that will be an interesting development going forward, because
sure.
what this really signifies is this is a thing in esports now. Especially yep. if Riot was to get on the ground there and do this, this normalizes it to a point, especially given that they were the team that got pushback on this in the past, right? The
right.
Neom deal. If they are now able to push this past their fan base, I think this is just within the Overton window. Yes,
mm-hmm. it's not really Overton window. You're misusing words again, Yiska.
I'm just using it the way I like. You
get
me.
Speech. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay, and then for those, big word, misused. Fair enough. Overton window is just like the types of
the
policies that fit
right.
into the current, into what you can say out loud without being like stamped as a lunatic in order to not be able to be voted for in politics generally, like, right? So it, metaphorically in the esports space, like, everything that doesn't get you fired is within the Overton window to a degree, right?
Sure.
Fired or canceled or whatever you want to say. So it's going to be an interesting development. It's going to be an interesting time going forward. No matter what happens,
mm-hmm.
I'm still very much behind, like standing behind my report that EFG has been pegged as one of the tournament organizers. These guys are owned by by EFG, and EFG is part of the same investment fund that will be running, the Saudi World Cup.
Sure.
So we are in the system, right? There's the level of fusiation. I'm blanking on the word. They have level of abstraction to the connection. I'm not sure if it really matters. What kind of political opinion or moral opinion you might have there, but
mm-hmm.
I think this is now unavoidable, right?
Like, sure. Yeah.
We're in a period of time, in a really rough period of time, where capital is not really accessible. American VCs and European VCs have been turned off this industry. Specifically, this product is hurting. If there's one paying, then there are many shareholders that require companies to move in certain ways. Basically, every publicly traded company would have to find a very good argument against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it go, right? Like, there's
yeah.
really nothing that we could could do. Now, of course, I don't know what is happening. I don't know the scope. I don't really 100% understand what the World Cup is really about. Maybe I misunderstood the explanation Jacob gave. I very much recommend reading the report Jacob did. I would also say that that it's feasible to understand this as a temperature check, and that the fact that this is like reporting from a message that was disseminated amongst Riot employees implies as much that it is a temperature check. It's not like something that Jacob had to, you know, like go behind the scenes and like ask executives for or whatever. So we're in that. Maybe that moment has already passed, but like it feels like one of the pivotal moments in esports where communities take make a decision, and mm-hmm. then we will see where this leads in the following years.
Yeah, it is extremely difficult to see because of how far-reaching yes. this particular investment fund's like tendrils reach. A complete hands clean free deal for any kind of like large scale esport that wants to like really try to prop itself up on the back of some capital. You know, with if memory serves, like DreamHack and all of that stuff is still owned now by the Saudi investment.
Yes, DreamHack.
Correct.
Faceit.
The only thing that isn't is Blast, right?
Correct. And PGL, I think.
Okay, got it. Yeah. But those are still like very like game specific, like
yes.
organizers.
Yes, actually, like you know, Esports Engine did most of the out production last year, right?
Right. Yeah.
The parent company Vindex is also part of EFG. So
right.
like technically all was already run by the
right.
that by EFG last year in mm-hmm. some sense, right? So maybe not that cognizant to folks in the industry.
I think there is that like 7 degrees of separation, not of Kevin Bacon, but of weird sports wash money. That, you know, does obfuscate it for a lot of people that like are just casual fans and then do just want to support their favorite teams and favorite players. That doesn't make it okay morally. That's not what we're going to argue, but it is, you know, not talked about. You know what is talked about right now on ArcHow, whether or not Mauga is beautiful or whether or not Mauga is a good hero in Overwatch or, you know, ranked ladder stuff. A lot of the interest in the competitive side of things has been kind of reset with the death of the Overwatch League and with the absolute destitution of news that just isn't out right now. There's no news. There probably won't be any news for, you know, the not foreseeable future, but I would be, you know, sometime in this quarter, I would imagine that we would get some kind of inkling of what's going to happen this year. I think that's like a safe assumption, right? It's difficult to see a future moving forward without any kind of
very
exciting.
Soon, hopefully, like or in terms of
I
like
would
the...
assume so too, but I mean I'm gonna play it incredibly safe and just say sometime within the next couple months, you know,
yeah,
we'll get something concrete.
Yeah, I feel like we probably have to find something out this month if they wouldn't have any chance in hell in order
yeah.
for because like keep in mind folks are still trying to figure out like what their next deal is. The contract length that are being signed are still reserved. Like even the collegiate contracts I keep hearing about, like are pretty reserved about their time length. Everyone is like sort of like waiting. What's coming? Like where
sure.
is the industry moving? It's not easy to foretell where people should go with their lives. And
yeah.
the fact that we're still like I assume like they're this. Upwards of 500 different people are currently still pegging their future on Overwatch as an esport, right? It, to
sure.
some degree, rather, if it's a player, if it's teams, if it's general managers, if it's, you know, like some are being kept around, some are have been let go. These new structures will have to be figured out. Then also, like, the developmental talent. It's not like only the old players wanted to play Overwatch competitively. There's also a bunch of, like, people in the collegiate system or people in, you know, like, in contenders or whatnot that had the thought of playing Overwatch at the highest level but never got there in time for Overwatch League and were not recruited but still very much want to play it to the highest degree. So, all those guys are just like then third party, right? Like, I mean, including ourselves, right? We have to make career choices here. The info needs to come out in a timely fashion. Now, I understand that you need to figure out a system that also works. Granted, right? Like, you like, I'd rather them take time and come up with something good than rush it and keep everyone around.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, this is still the order of importance in this situation. So,
yep.
We'll see. But yeah, like, I had hoped and assumed we would know already last year. Things always take longer than you assume they would.
Even just communication. And again, that's always been something that I've been an advocate for. Both for Overwatch Esports and just for Activision Blizzard as a whole, communicate. And it always seems like they start with like a solid track record at the turn of some kind of chapter, and then it just kind of quiets down again, and there's not any kind of communication. I'm not saying come out and say give nothing burgers, but give developments. See what you're talking about. Obviously, there's movements being made, or there's talks in consideration, or you wouldn't be reporting on things. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff moving, so talk about what you can. Talk about, like, what's going on, or give, like, a platform to support collegiate. You know, you can say things and create platforms for the community to speak to them, and unfortunately, that's just not happening. And I don't know why. I don't know.
That's the thing that concerns me a little. Is because it feels like a game of chicken, which esports publisher or publisher with an esports game will announce the news about their participation first.
Sure.
And then everyone's just like, oh, let's see.
Well, they're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
Right. Like, I think that's a big thing that's.
But what I'm saying is that it doesn't even have to be specifically about the Saudi like World Cup. It could just be in general about like the future of Overwatch esports, where it's just like, you know,
I mean, like if Jacob's report, like Jacob added the Lambo $45 million tournament, right?
Yeah.
If this is true and Overwatch is part of it, then this is very likely to be TI, right? Like. For us.
I mean, basically, yeah. This would be like a landmark event on the potential Overwatch esports calendar. Whether or not you want to support that, I guess I'll leave that up to the viewers. I have a sneaking suspicion that I do kind of have to side with you. I really don't know. With how much initiative has been pushed to support, you know, game changers and you know, systems of that sort. I think it has grown an audience and a fan base, and I think that is becoming more and more accepted within the greater Overwatch sphere. And it is like a solid and incredible part of this, you know, portfolio in this community. And I don't think that's something that they want to get rid of or lose, and any kind of participation. It would make me raise an eyebrow into how that side of the community really kind of feels about this game, or about, you know, esports in general. If that's just the new norm in esports, maybe that's just something I don't know. That's a really, really difficult question to ask, you know, people that are marginalized like that to just deal with. But if there's really nothing else out there that isn't, you know, as big, like it does suck. I don't know like the right course of action. My gut says this shouldn't be a thing. You have invested so much into community curation around, you know, game changers. Is that even, it just doesn't seem right. right? It just doesn't seem to align at all. And I agree with what you're saying when it comes to this is being a big game of chicken, right?
Right.
So it's...
I feel compelled to bring one silver lining to the table, which is like in Overwatch specific case, I feel a lot of excitement. Like the people that I want there is the, like with notable exceptions, of course, you immediately know who I'm talking about, but I want players. Like I'm fucking in love with Quartz. Okay.
Sure. Great player.
That scene is low key so good. So untapped, right?
Very, very talented. Minor correction, it's not Game Changers, that's the Valorant stuff. Overwatch's stuff is Calling All Heroes.
Right.
I'm so sorry. That is completely on me. Mixed up the two. Continue though.
Yeah. It's a very the scene that built there is like super cool for Overwatch in terms of like what kind of talents come in there, what kind of excitement is there for the game. Of course, they're the World Cup winners, the leading champions, so to speak, right? So that's like the silver lining for sure. It'll be interesting how this develops, how the community receives this, and what. Like once this happens, either way, like what kind of strategies can be run in order to, improve the outcome to the maximum, maybe closer. You know,
it's true. It's a little ironic that our guest for this episode is Against the Storm, and we are kind of esports is fighting its own battle against trying to take weird money.
You're
fighting our own.
Can you guys tell that Joe is like really relaxed? Like his lateral thinking, segues, connecting weird topics together. It's just like these synapses are firing on the top Christmas.
But look, there's nothing else to talk about. So it's any kind of connectivity. There's not a lot to manage. So it's going all over the place. These are the constant machinations of my inner mind palace.
I wish I could say the same, because the ways in which I'm fucking up here is crazy, Joe. I'm playing the worst. I am like, I gotta train this. Okay.
This is a small Easter egg to any old esports heads that may or may not have listened to another podcast where a very curmudgeonly StarCraft player may or may not have been playing video games as they did the podcast. That's all I'm saying. So that's the Saudi esports news. TLDR, it's, a betting person would probably place some kind of wager that Overwatch will probably be featured in what kind of capacity, we're unsure. But as Jacob Wolf has reported, which I would definitely go support journalism, support esports journalists that are incredible and award-winning, obviously one on the show. Go check out the report.
Quitting if there's no significant capital behind it. You know,
aren't we all? Yeah.
Yeah. You know who's not going to take that money? You know, so we got to find solutions for those truth
big solutions. Yes, 100%. So that's a lay of the land. And you're obviously not the only one, very much in the same realm where it's like, if we don't get news soon, you can't stay around forever. So we'll see what that future looks like. Speaking of. It is the Christmas season. It is the holiday season. The new year is upon us. Day three of only watch part two. Did kind of think about like a wish list for the year. Thinking about, let's rein in the year with some positivity. If we had to think about how Overwatch esports is successful this year, what does that look like? What does that look like for us? What does that look like for the game, for content creation? What are like success metrics for this year as a whole for you? Is there anything that kind of like jumps out at you as a wish list item that you're just writing to Santa and going, dear Papa Santa, please bring me the the narrative building of the Riot Games?
Nah, the benchmark of this year is sustained viewership to a degree, and by proxy, or rather, like, in effect, bring big multi-gaming organizations back to this esport.
Yeah.
Establish a identity in terms of content. Uh-huh. Here's a warning, right? You can guess that I have some idea of what's going on next year.
Sure.
If you think you can be a player and just like chill and only play the game at a top level, I have rude awakenings. Like, we're filtering now for content machines as well. Maybe you can pass by if you're like the best and you get like all the prize monies and whatnot. Everyone else will have to find some solution in order to monetize their craft, right? And I think a lot of players have already moved smartly. I think a lot of coaches have moved smartly in a way as to facilitate, you know, making content. I foresee that the tone of the content and the type of audience we will get will necessarily change as it moves into an open system, because we are going away from the regular sports fan, right? Like, this is not the way this esports will work. Is not like regular league play into like every week I show up with my London Spitfire jersey, watch one game, and it's done, right? Like, that's not the nature of the open system. It will attract different types of fans. We will probably lose fans that stuck around because this was tied 100% to geolocated stuff. Now, once again, based on our reporting and our interviews, we know that some orcs not only will that like are still interested in sticking around, but will also use their branding, right? And maybe we will have some of those recognizable names. Maybe you're not totally out of luck if you're a fan of that type. Maybe there is still something here for you. Maybe, you know, Adam Adamu from Toronto Defiant will say, said like at least for 2024, they're probably starting as Toronto Defiant. Then considering like binding under one big brand for 25, right?
Sure. A la the Guard in a way.
Yeah, it feels like Bad Alliance is probably the brands that I would look at. Like they,
or
the way they move.
For
those that don't know, like in the LEC, they built a Spanish team, so they seem to be doubling down on their Spanish identity a lot. There, fair enough. I think like there's an interesting pattern. Okay, we're going full lateral. I'm ass pulling content here, Joe. I hope the viewers will enjoy.
Oh my god, Yiska, not my bottom. Oh gosh.
But basically, advertisers, or rather Twitch and advertisers, have found out that there is a hard gap in terms of like what kind of audience you can get for Twitch. This is streaming, okay?
Sure.
Streaming is unlikely to break into the absolute mainstream. You need some gremlin type of audience that watches more hours. Like the Twitch community has the hardcores, the streaming community, right?
Yes.
Follow one guy. They watch an exorbitant amount of content from that one guy, but this is not how the mainstream consumes. It kind of crystallized that streaming is like this, okay? Streaming will not become this super mainstream phenomena, at least in the United States, as it is looking right now. There is an exception in that, in how I perceive Spanish fandom of streams, right? So the type of numbers that some of those Spanish streamers pull, type of numbers Spain pulls in Spain, like that's a country where I could see Twitch or streaming becoming like a mainstream platform here, right?
Yeah.
And it just therefore, like, you just follow the numbers. You just look like what kind of a community delivers and is excited about stuff. I'm looking at France. I'm looking at at Spain as those two countries that really consistently deliver like great esports fan atmospheres. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of solid foundation to be. Okay.
Yep.
So it would make sense for me if that was basically like the hinted. I messed up. The hinted move, you know, going forward. But we'll see. I don't know for sure, but it seems to be like a likely move for the Defiant, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly there.
Makes perfect sense that the initiative... I mean, there again, maybe you don't necessarily want to tie the Mad Lions brand to anything that isn't, you know, Spanish-speaking, because it might look a little weird to sponsors, or it's more attractive to sponsors that it's specifically Spanish speaking, you know, a brand that's creating content and organize, or is managing organizations or teams in Spanish speaking regions. That makes a ton of sense. That to me is both a mark of where things are at, you know, economically, where we need to look at, you know, really buckling down all of the cargo on the ship, crossing our I's, dotting our T's, making sure that like we're really trying to move towards the green and we can't just be burning money anymore like we have for a long time. Fans of the show can recount some of my rather more hot takes going into the beginning of this season and seasons past, where it's like, look, nobody's making any money, guys. Don't be shocked if there's fucking streamers that show up on these Overwatch League teams. Obviously, they didn't happen. But, like, that's the kind of mode that we kind of have to move into, where it's we have to look at both, you know, what is successful? What's successful? Content creation. A move like Mad Lions to go try to really capture and tap into that Spanish-speaking audience makes a ton of sense from a number of different angles. Sponsorship angle, content angle, viewerships there. I would have to assume... And I don't know for sure, but I've followed enough esports to know that, like, Spanish-speaking countries do produce some fucking solid talent.
That's also true, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there are no slouches. This isn't just like you're throwing caution to the wind and going full content brain, you know? Like, Spain can fucking compete. Same thing with France. You know, I think in League of Legends, I think it's Carmine Corp, right?
Yeah.
Big, just like set, like third-party org that just... not blew up overnight, but like has really kind of captured the hearts and minds of the French audience, rallying that like very, very passionate crowd for those esports. You know, you look at like Team Peps. Team Peps is like a historically Overwatch for a minute, like French based organization, and they have French fans that come out. Same thing with like Twisted Minds in Saudi Arabia and all across the globe. Like everybody has their like little pockets. And sadly, the United States doesn't have one. I think that could change. We'll have to see. I think there are brands that are starting to kind of like pull ahead and just are like being, if there was going to be one, that, you know, something like a Team Liquid could be. But it wouldn't shock me if more and more teams start to look like that and more esports start to look like that, where it is a little bit more domestic. It is, you know, they take a step back from the utmost, you know, highest caliber game, not gameplay, but like the tier one leagues, and they move investment and shift kind of focus into more domestic leagues because it's more profitable in the long run. They can gather more sponsors. It's more attractive. It's less output. You know, you don't have to spend multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars to sign incredibly talented players to compete at the top level when that's not sustainable. And it's not, you know, you can't recoup any kind of losses there because you're just out. The output is too much. You know, you're not getting enough, you know, to use a, I feel like this is just a giant against the storm plug, but like the economics just make all the beavers and all the lizards and all the humans leave.
Right.
And if you can't, you're not keeping anybody happy. So you have to kind of play, you have to play the field. And the field to me at this point looks like it's very content brained. You need to be more domestic or picking some kind of audience to kind of tailor your your content too. And sometimes that content is just the players that you're signing. And we kind of already saw that in Overwatch towards the beginning of like the early contenders era, where teams had their, you know, their brothers and sister teams that they would, you know, I'm blanking on the word, but they're like not the collegiate team, but like their second tier team, academy. There it is. They had their academy teams, and I think it was like reported that, you know, British Hurricane was like very pushed to want to hire and, you know, sign UK talent. Shocking nobody, you know, there is. If you're going to be a geolocated league and you're having geolocated names, shocker, people of that region may be a little bit more interested, and having players that share those same stories are more relatable because they live and have lived in those regions. That doesn't shock me. That doesn't surprise me. So that's a move in one direction that I think most esports could and maybe should take. What you did kind of open up there was another question that I had. Do you think it's worthwhile for some of these former Overwatch League brands to maintain their brands? Now, that seems a little counterintuitive. Let me pose it to you this way. Do you think that the community looks at those brands under like the shadow or the former ideas that happened or were within the Overwatch League? Or is it worthwhile to rebrand and try to create this from a fresh start, maybe move into a multi-gaming organization that it was kind of always meant to be? Is it worthwhile to kind of stay as the Toronto Defiant long term? Whereas, you know, esports really isn't, you can't just be in one esport, you know?
The problem is we do not have the information necessarily to say that. So yes, they are able to retain those brands, but what about those skins? Right? Like,
sure.
Like, do they just stay in Overwatch? Like, is that a thing that we're doing? With like,
yeah.
Could I be the LA Valiant and just like sell, you know, like that stuff to someone? Is that a possibility, or what are we doing here? Right. So that's the thing that we need to consider, and I think that's the big one. Like, I don't think there are too many other, like, otherwise it's just like straight up bad to stay with a brand that's ultimately not going to,
you know, do anything,
the remaining fandom. Yeah, like, it's sad, but like, it's not a long-term play. I don't see this one. Now, if there was never going to be any other skins of teams, but those would be retained, there would still be profit share or something. I'm not sure how it even works, right? But like,
yeah,
if there's still monetary benefit to keeping these, even if it's just like in-game advertisement for your stuff.
Sure. Maybe there's...
Yeah, maybe I could
something
see
like
that
a Boston. I could see that. I could see maybe Toronto staying around. Obviously, you know, we've talked quite a bit on the show about how successful Toronto was at like selling merch and skins and whatnot. Apparently they were, you know, fairly successful, surprisingly. But there is some kind of value there.
And
how much we
they
want to
say
tie.
We don't want to do it, right? Like,
exactly.
They
that's...
are saying like, let's move away from this. Like, we want to have a one big brand for all our stuff.
Yeah.
Makes the most sense. I think like, at some point you got to ask yourself what do orcs actually bring to the table, you know? Like, if orcs are real freaking careful, they're sort of like being too economical to the point where they don't provide enough of a service that like talent agencies might not just be able to do the thing that they are providing to the talent, right?
I mean, we're already kind of seeing, I think in early Valorant, we started to see kind of a crossover there where like I feel like there was a couple talent agencies that were like signing teams and like we're just acting both as an organization, but also the talent agency.
Yep.
Which is, it does kind of, it is a weird, that those lines are being blurred for sure.
Yeah, it's like an exhibition, like you basically showcase talent, but the same time, like, what do talents, like, if you are the content machine, if you have a working YouTube channel that is based on your ability to play, like, at a tier 1, tier 2 level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you really need? Maybe you need a visa. Maybe you need access to sponsors and whatnot.
Yep.
It's not without question that others than team ownership groups can provide that as they diversify into other businesses that are also not part of the core anymore. Now, of course, like, team owners are listening to this. It's far short from that, right?
Sure.
It's also like it kind of sort of requires players to be able to think that way. But I think we're filtering for these types of guys now, right? Like the hyper-competitive,
especially in this climate.
Right. The hyper-competitive dudes are being forced out. There's nothing like...
There's no stability here. The future is bleak.
You're looking at like League of Legends where you can still like... It's about status and it's about being able to pay for family down the line, right? Like these are the things that at some base level folks consider.
Mm-hmm.
And if that falls away, they will go elsewhere where their competitive spirit is still a feasible, you know, long-term plan, while also allowing or making room for, you know, these other guys that are more trying to do the content while also playing. And I feel like, okay, this is a hot take, but I feel like there's basically no shot that folks could be as good at Call of Duty as they are for as long if it was just about playing the game.
Oh, yeah, no.
Right?
Not at all.
Like
that is not something that is going to reward you in the long run, and I don't know, even like talking this through makes me like, there's a follow-up question that I think I want to pose to you, but continue.
Yeah, I just feel like it's very likely that the Call of Duty community didn't just... I somehow won that, Joe. I don't know. I brought it back from the brink. It's likely that they also had a filtering mechanism for content in there just by the pressures of that community, right? Like, but by how it looked at a certain point of time before it professionalized, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. When you have, like, the optics and, like, the YouTube montage, like, era of Call of Duty, that's, like, ingrained in the culture of the community, right?
Yeah, and now, like, they are all fucking, like, they all have content brain. And it's nice for that scene, right? I think, like in my mind, Call of Duty is also going the way of Owl. I feel like, for those that didn't follow, Call of Duty League went back to Twitch last year, had viewership records. This year, they signed a YouTube deal again.
Right.
Much to the dismay of the ownership group.
Yep.
Because, like, a guy like Hax, who's the CEO, I think, of Optic, which is also Envy, right? Like, that's the same ownership group now, just said, like, it can't be that we're moving to YouTube because it would be bad for the CDL, and then they moved to YouTube. Presumably because those were the only guys. Like, conceptually, both the CDL and the Overwatch League were designed with those licensing agreements in mind, right? It's really hard to come back from the PSA, the TPA, without those, right?
Yep.
Call of Duty was a little bit better in attracting sponsors, but generally speaking, like, it's still a hard thing for them to do, right?
Yep. And this, like, if anybody's, like, questioning why people would want to make those exclusive deals, go back, and I think Uber kind of paints a clear enough picture as to, like, what that really looked like, where in a climate where there is not a lot of money, and you have a, whether it be a production budget that you need to maintain, whether it be, you know, a level of quality that you need to maintain, whether it be, you know, player salaries that need to be maintained, prize pool, something needs to be maintained, that taking an exclusive deal for, you know, whatever kind of compensation is more attractive than trying to court enough sponsors or tap into a dwindling sponsor pool to make the equivalent make sense. You know, it math doesn't check out. as much as like the viewership, and that's what a lot of people just like immediately jump to, is like, oh, well, the viewership is down.
Yeah.
What value does a viewer provide?
Yeah.
It does. It's a loose success metric as to like how like viewable or watchable the content is, but how like what is the, I hate to use like clicks per minute, you know, or view hours watched. What does that look like in terms of like monetary value to a sponsor? We don't know. I don't know that that's even like great anymore. It probably was at one point, but now with everybody kind of moving away from esports, is that really worthwhile? Is viewership king? I don't know. I really don't know.
King in situations where unsophisticated advertisers are the
sure.
supply chain. Right.
And that's like, am I wrong in saying we need to so desperately get away from that?
I mean, if we still can find some fools, man, like, but
I mean, yes, if we can get some pay pigs to like float us for a while, great. But like, that's not sustainable, even in like the mid to short term.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how we've been running this rat race for so long. Overwatch League included. Don't like, you want to talk about like unsavvy investors, like look no further than Bobby Kotick's billionaire.
Oh yeah.
Crew of
rip.
You speak. Yeah.
Rip, big my rip. Dude.
Adios. Like they're around, they're out there. It was so surprising that nobody really ever drew any kind of question just from like even casual fans. Like, wow, we had that sponsor, or I remember that sponsor being around for a little bit. I wonder where they went. I don't know where they went. Like, they left because they didn't meet any kind of metrics that wanted to keep them sticking around.
To be fair, I feel like people were aware that this was happening also because of Bobby Kotick. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes, like, I think in our neck of the woods, it was. But I think in the greater, like...
Right. Yeah, possible.
Esports sphere. I really don't know how many people were like really looking at these brands that would pop up, and they were recognizable, and then they would just leave.
Right.
In terms of like sponsorship, the reason why they were leaving is because they weren't getting any value, and we were just courting them, not under false pretenses, but you know, because it was the hot thing to just kind of throw some money at, and it just never paid off. Because guess what? Esports fans don't buy anything. That's the. The $1 million question is how do you get this
I
very
hope,
passionate group to buy things.
I hope we get like a new esports title that we're very much due for, and that title is just like liquid crack for that
sure.
generation, and they just come out of the gate and say, well, we're enforcing paywalls. That's the best.
Yeah,
thing.
We need to tap into the whales of like the gacha games, or the like. I hate to say it because I'm so like I'm a little bit more consumer pilled than most. Like, but there's just so much money to be made in like mobile, like pay to win fucking spheres. You know what I mean? Like,
that's another thing. Yeah, like
it's insane the return.
That's another aspect of like asking like. Is viewership important, or is whales like most highest amount of whales important in that regard? Gotta say, the attraction of whales, which was kind of good. They got all that VC, like those guys are whales, essentially, right?
I mean, yeah, we courted whales, but we never gave them to use a gaming analogy. We never gave them any content to like spend their money on to complete.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's a weird take, by the way, Joe. That I look. I'm no fan of Bobby Kotick, right?
Sure.
But mother, like, dudes are way too, like, they succeeded in spite of Bobby Kotick. Folks got to realize this is fit. This man was majorly successful, right?
Sure. You don't have to agree with him, but, like...
The numbers are just, like, where Activision, where from where, like... If you dislike that, your criticism should be with a system, right? Like,
sure.
Yes, you can dislike what, of course, for especially for the death threats or whatever he posted.
Sure.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about his acts as a CEO, and he was immensely successful with all the shit. Like, you almost have to say, like, only towards the end where it was very obviously a squeeze, right? Where we're like just trying to get the last couple of percents before a new ownership group comes in, and we're making all these decisions that, like,
yeah,
we have a saying. I'm not sure if there's a saying in German as well, in English. It's basically after me the flood. Okay, like whatever sure. comes after me, like I don't care. Flood this place, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And this is what it felt like the decisions from high up for a long time, right? But previously, like the in how commercially successful he was, you, like, as a shareholder, you'd love him. And, like, the deal he cut with Microsoft is ridiculous.
Sure.
It was not a long-term functioning thing. Like, it was constantly squeezing and not... But, like, that's the system. You got to realize, like, this guy wasn't a bad CEO in the sense of, like, what a shareholder might value. So
yes. He wasn't a bad
should
businessman.
Should be with a system, not yes. with, like... They succeeded in spite of him. No, like this guy was good at his job in that particular sense, right? So
yeah, he was shit at his job in plenty of other facets. Nobody's going to be defending him and all of his
you know
failures.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like they did make fucking I don't want to say record profits, but they were very profitable with the launch of like Diablo Immortal. I think King was always killing it. Like
that's the thing. Like see. Like, I'm just going, like, yeah, the consumer sucks. like, you guys have phones? Like, yeah, every fucker had a phone, and that thing is, like, majorly successful. Yep. Why, like, I feel like there should also be, like, a reflexive thing. Like, yes, this company sucks, but oh, holy shit. Like, there are consumers amongst us in this group that are also just, like,
oh yeah,
100%. Doing this to us. Like,
yes.
The problem is,
and they're loud, and they're annoying,
they're loud,
but
and they're willing to pay. And then, like, you just got to judge with your, and then just move on to better things. Like, yeah, you can only work with the wallet system.
Yep, 100%. And that's the ultimate form of rebellion. And if you want to actually kind of create social change, but with your wallet, and that's boycotting is never a non-messy act because you are hurting good people. There are successful and very good people and very good developers that are working in spite of some whatever kind of criticism is levied towards whether it be Activision Blizzard or Riot Games or whatever developers out there. There are good people there that it sucks that they have to kind of be at the whim of a consumer that both is negligent, but also is becoming more and more politically driven, and that's something to take in consideration as well.
You just
to kind of
gotta work with your wallet, basically.
Yes, 100%. And that's ultimately like both in the positive and the negative, where it's like we need to create better products to give to a rather spoiled, like, let's face it, like we've all been very spoiled in the content that we've been able to consume for free for this long,
right?
We need to entice and create content that is from a development, from a studio level, is worth buying. Let's just cut it there, and that needs to be used as a marketing tool for the competitive product. It doesn't need to be esports in the sense that like there needs to be a greater league and there has to be stipends and needs to be all these things. I think just having some kind of crowdfunding, very much in the same way that, and it's tough to kind of bring this up because I know I want to say that Valve also stopped doing this because it wasn't worth the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, but like the compendium was for TI, that could be something that is successful for Overwatch. That could be something that's successful for esports as a whole.
Right? Folks don't care. Like, just like once again, okay. If you're a listener, you're probably have tinnitus of this saying of me bringing it up. But like, esports is a lie, and it's all about the drama. It is just how it be. Like, folks,
it is. That's that you're jumping ahead of me. And that's where I think like the content needs to be driven, where it's like, okay, right, we get skins work for to some degree. But how do we tap into, if we know that esports is more narrative and drama focused, that it is about competition, and I think that if you are under that illusion, I'm sorry, but we've dispelled it. Like, hello, the Overwatch League has failed because there was no storylines that were readily told to you. It's not that they didn't exist. They were there, but they weren't the focus of the budget, right? And if they were, maybe we'd still be around. Maybe not. That is a different discussion for a different day. However, if we agree that esports as a whole, like Yiska said, is a lie, it's about entertainment, it's about drama, it's about, you know, the it's more content brain than it is competition brain, how do we create some kind of paid content to cater to that audience? So whether that be a to use Dota's TrueSight, for example, maybe it's a not a feature film, but some kind of content around the stories of an event. Is that something that people are going to want to buy? I don't know, because nobody's really tried it yet.
I think like the only way it can really work is like, it's very obvious that folks like investing in personalities.
Right.
It can only come from the personality type of content, probably facilitated through the respective content creator.
Sure, then give me like a documentary around the most popular motherfucker you've got in your scene.
But it has to be scuffed. They want authentic, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's probably legitimately like bad to buy like a John, I hear him turning like on his I don't know why I was going towards grave. John's very much alive, but the thing is, like, he'd probably hate this trend of like shit microphone. Like your Samsung fucking the box microphone is now much more desirable as a recording tool than like your $700 microphone, right?
I don't know if it's desirable is like the right word, but it's not that people want that. It's that it's more, I think, relatable than something else. You know what I mean? Like it is, it gives this air of, oh, they're just like me because I don't have the big mic arm and I don't have the crazy quality. Like I'm just like a fucking kind of cheap gaming student who enjoys playing games and like wants to be entertained as I study, you know? And right, it's more about the content and how it makes you feel, as much as, you know, competition nerds don't want to hear that. That's where we're going. And that's ultimately where I think we always had an in, let's call it, you know, Yiska and I have had plenty of discussions about esports attainment and like how that could be successful. It unironically could work.
I feel like
we're, and
also,
I think we're starting to see that.
We seriously got to consider, like, I think a lot of folks are already doing this. It's like low key, but the kayfabe nature of it and like making it seem very real and like everyone's big mad and whatnot. Like,
you have to sell fights. You have to. Everybody does it. Any kind of competition has to create marketing and has to create buzz.
Yeah.
Why do you think like celebrity boxing has always been like kind of around forever? Whether it be with the Jake Paul and random like retired football stars,
right,
or, you know, YouTubers, you know, if you want to go to like Europe, I know that that's a little bit bigger with like the KSIs and, you know, some of the European crowd, or like even creating European football, like super, like all-star teams and creating events around that. Like that's stuff that people would want to go see. Right. And lo and behold, there's a lot of drama around it. There's a lot of like, and whether or not it's real, it doesn't matter because it gets butts in seats and it gets eyes. Right. And there's obviously a line. We're not advocating for any kind of like crazy fucking batshit, you know, unhinged behavior. But there needs to be, and consumers have to be a little bit more tolerant of people selling the product. Mm-hmm. And that's what we kind of have to, I think, refer to this as when it comes to Overwatch, when it comes to esports as a whole. It's a product, and we have to be able to sell it. And if you can't, then You have to be damn good to survive, to be fit, right?
Right.
And like Yiska has talked about, and like I think Christopher has talked about on the Uncoachables podcast, and I think Funny Asher talked about it on this show as well. Like, scrimming and streaming at the same time, like being able to kind of like use that as content is incredibly valuable because people unironically want to watch.
Yeah.
So getting in the way of that is not doing the product any good, and you are ultimately harming yourself.
Yeah.
We all know this shit has been leaked before anyways. You are not hiding anything. You are hurting yourself more than you are helping yourself.
Also, stop being friends with your competitors. God damn. Want some blood feuds, okay? Put your crossbone on the line or something. I want to feel.
Yeah. In a way, like... That's the ultimate thing. And sometimes, let's be honest, you know, if we want to go fucking full-on professional wrestling, sometimes it's okay to be the bad guy. Right. You don't have to go off the wall, and you also have to be okay with, you know, filling that role. But so long as I think everybody's in on it from the professional side of things, it's okay to just rile people up.
Right.
Yeah. And use that as a marketing tool to kind of, like, sell these fights. These are all things that we've talked endlessly about, and it is really, really difficult to try to like both get buy-in and educate the professionals because it is tough.
Dude, like, but especially at our age, like,
of course,
to ask them to put their face in the sawmill, you know, like it's just really hard. And like
that's only one, but that's the thing, is like that's only one way to approach this. You don't have to be the bad guy, but sometimes maybe you can just be the bad guy for this. You don't have to be the bad guy forever.
Right.
You need to everybody needs to basically create this like arms race of like, if none of us say anything and none of us try to sell this, then we all fail. So we all need to kind of put ourselves in. And you want to know where I think it's most understood that this is the thing? From the production side of things.
Right.
Yeah. That's where I unironically think that this could really embed itself in an experimental way. I don't know if this would be successful. That's to be a TBD. But if you had a desk personality, a la some of the, you know, esports figureheads of days old that are a little bit more edgy, a little bit more pokey, that will like ask more loaded questions to people, that maybe will even cast the games in an incredibly biased way that people will hate and will people love. You know what I mean? That's the ultimate crux of a lot of this, is that we have to get people to care again. Because right now nobody cares, and you want to know why we can tell? Because nobody watches this shit. Ultimately, like, let's call a spade, we wouldn't be under a financial blanket of, you know, the esports winter if everybody fucking watched. You know what I mean? So it's about getting people to care again, and that has to come from a little bit more experimentation, which is another buzzword that we have said on the show a number of times, and here we are saying it again.
Yeah.
That's kind of a key word that I want to see really embodied in 2024, as this wish list like kind of gets written, is like experimentation. Whether that's experimenting with the broadcast talent and like what you're not allowed to say, but the role you play on the broadcast, opening up new roles.
Look, I'm giving you a little bit of juice, right?
Oh, juicing time.
Man, I feel like, okay, I heard some interesting stuff about who's coming up. It's also a fucking nightmare for talent in this industry at the moment.
Of course it is. You're telling me the easiest and most undervalued role in a production team is like under fire? Of course it is. I'm not saying it should be. It makes a lot of sense that it is incredibly hard as a caster or as a production facing person.
Also,
the esports industry right now.
I'm going to say something unpopular, and I think the real ones know, but like, this is also the moment in time where it makes perfect sense that your rates are dropping because there's a competitor in town. You got to be more entertaining than the co-streamer. And the costume is free, right? Like, well, not free, because
the most marketing, yeah.
Yeah, like if the publishers can still sell the co-streamers, the co-streamers' numbers to the advertisers, right?
Why would I pay?
That's free. Like, this guy is also really excited. He's better, a better market fit towards, like, whatever's coming. Like, it's, you gotta be able to compete with that, and there's always room for those big. That's always the weird thing that I never understood, why you would niche yourself that way. I feel like there's value in guys that can entertain large crowds in a filled out stadium. These epic moments. Someone has to cast the world finals. Okay.
Yep.
Those guys need to be around. Uber needs to be around. Those guys. If I'm the guy that's basically the co-streamer on stream, why, bro? Just do your own shit. Right? Yeah. And that's unfortunate. Like, I think that those guys that are... Dude, I'm playing this game. My filters are dropping. I'm just going to say it. Those guys are, like, the funniest guy on the broadcast, but would not be funny enough to have a co-stream. You're going to be in a high... Like, it's not going to be fun for us.
The same criticism and the same things that we're pushing players to do, I think production and casters in a lot of ways have to probably... do as well. You can't just do the craft. You can't just be, not everybody can be so good that they're casting world finals, because shocker, you know, it's just in, there's only one world finals per game, you know what I mean? Like, there's only one finals a year. There's only, like, so many big tournaments to cast. There's only so much gravitas to grab hold of. So what else are you bringing to the table? That's, like, sadly where the state of the health of esports is, you know what I mean?
Now,
so it's all the same shit. You have to bring more. And it's not just casting. It's not just playing. It's your brand. And that's always been a big buzzword. Now we're starting to get to, like, what it really means to make a brand.
Yeah. And now I will also have to go the other way and say, like, I'm not one of those guys that would sign whatever was said on not fully sign. And I'm actually quite surprised that Gunba was the guy to bring it up, because I experienced Gunba as a guy that it's always very cognizant of the business. But, and I will eventually hopefully get to smoke them on this opinion as well, but the idea that the casters were the ones to be culled, so to speak, for doing what essentially the production crew told them to do is a weird one. Like, it's very obvious that this is not their call to make these things. This one guy just, like, doing, like, terrible...
Me when I get one guide. Can't,
like,
be me.
Marketing research, going like, oh, yeah. The guys that are, like, absolute weirdos and participate in market research surveys, or the absolute weirdos that are on Reddit and sharing their opinion, like, are representative of our audience. We do not have better data. Tough luck. Please cast the way in this way, right? Now, I will also say, analysis is not it. You're high if you think, like, this is, like, a cornerstone. Like, analysis cannot work. I think these guys know, because they saw their viewership as soon as they dipped into drama. Now, if you're saying you should be more dramatic and create more of that spice, I'm with you, but that's not something that was communicated by the...
By the choices from the production team as well.
I'm pretty sure, like, plenty of talent would have been happy to do just that. It's just not something that the production valued or communicated to them that this was desired. So it's not on them ultimately, right?
It's not ultimately. Ultimately, it is not. I think from piecing together enough, like, leak streams and some of the things that have been said in the past, I'm thinking of, like, yes, the Uncoachables podcast, but I even, like, remembering what, like, Flame said with, like, the Houston Outlaws debacle, and, like, some of what some of the other GMs have talked about, where people have gone to the league and have not been very happy about how their team was represented. And that ultimately was leveraged on what I would assume the casters could and could not do, the production team could and could not say.
Here's a data point for you. If that general manager comes to you and says, please let off, you know you're going to do something good.
Yes, exactly. You are, that is success. There is a line, again, I will forever caveat this to get the Timmies off our backs. We are not advocating for blood sport. We're not advocating for people running around and slurring each other. That's not what we're saying.
Nope.
What we're saying is we have to care. And if the GMs and the owners care, we're doing something right. Yeah. We can that is a success metric. Now, whether or not we can fine tune that, we have hit a gold mine. Now we have to be efficient on what we're doing with it.
Yep.
You need a handler to handle that. And you quiet that storm, because what you've done has tapped into something. What it has tapped into, we have to figure that. Yeah. We have to do a little bit more research into.
Yeah. Now,
but
I will also say, I definitely agree. Like, this is something that I have advocated for as well, that Cassis should do more research, should talk to teams more. Something Monty was very good about. That few folks did. I will say,
no, I agree.
To the real ones, of course, as the Scrimbox Lord, I was reached out to in order to get like some temperature measurements and what kind of stuff was being run and whatnot. And that's, I was always happy to provide an anonymized like meta knowledge in that regard, because these guys were doing research as well, right?
Yeah, of course.
So that, like, if you did that, you're a real one. I think there was also a time, like, that's something I actually want to highlight. I remember a time when, like, Josh, Bren, were doing research, and we, like, we were sitting in. Were you part of that? Not sure.
I remember doing some Chinese stuff with Sideshow. I think I remember doing, or sitting in on, some review session with Zoe at one point.
Right. Yes. That's
and I was incredibly impressed with like how everybody was not serious. I think it was very like loose and like talkative, but like people were doing the research. It just wasn't, it was never given a vehicle to like really talk about on the broadcast.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, like these people are not dumb
as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. These people aren't stupid. They do their research. Like the people that have been around are, I would say most of them. I can't speak for all of them because I don't know, but I know for sure that most of the people that were on the broadcast this year, both like full time and part time, are very, very active in like trying to look at and research and trying to understand the game to the best possible degree to be able to tell those stories. They understand how analysis can create storylines. And they use that to try to sell the product, right? Which is great. We love that. That is the job of the caster, right? Or one of the many jobs of the caster. It comes down to the limitations of production, what production can and can't say, the vehicles that they give the talent to be able to kind of tell those stories. And that was always a big criticism I think we both had of the Overwatch League, was that there was nothing to really tell the stories of these players, not the teams, which again leads me to believe that after 6 or 7 years, however fucking long we've been doing this, the ownership groups wanted this to be about the teams and the brands and less about the players, which again, hello, welcome to Esports 101, that doesn't fucking work. Want to know why? Because the brands don't exist in 5 or 6 years.
That's
period to the end.
That's the thing that folks never understood, really.
No.
Is the culture of your scene and the nature of the content is dictated by the characters of your players. The game that you have will attract a certain type of character of a player. If you have ever been to, like, interviewed, like, different types of folks from different esports, you will see very distinct differences.
Oh yeah.
And then because players are your content, the content for the most part, like all that matters are players, and then to a lesser degree talent that can steer the pot, the nature of their character is the thing that you should be creating your product towards, right? And that's something like, bro, the themes. And that's why like everyone was so fucking scared. It's not because everyone's like an inconsiderate shithead, these players aren't. But it's like the bars that were setting, being set early and the tone that was being struck by the broadcast was something that players just felt so insecure about, right?
Yeah.
In participating, right? And if you're not working with the energy, you're just like you're trying to sail your boat upstream against the wind, right? Like it's just like not something that that can work. You got to look at your players, got to figure out what kind of characters are they like, what kind of general cognitive profile am I attracting? So something like, for instance, if I'm interviewing a Dota guy, I might as well be interviewing a chess dude. This guy is like, sure. Oh yeah, and then the constellation of Wisp fucking Abaddon fucking thingy was played in game 5 in 1997. Oh,
that was Dota a TI 1. That was a TI4 comp, and I think LGD ran this. I think they had like a Phantom Lancer and a Dragon Slayer, and they did the BKB to Phase Blade. You know, it's about the love. You know, the love of Dota is very like, it sounds like it's very community. It's embedded itself in the community, and much in the same way that like the history of chess is like for a chess nerd, right? They are like in the most like affable and respectable. I say this with the utmost grace for a side of esports that I think is so cool. Like Dota fans are kind of nerds. Like if you are a Dota fan, like you know some like really really dorky like history, and it's cool. It's really really fucking awesome. But that's not everywhere. You know who aren't fucking nerds? The COD fans, the COD players. Yes. Like they're so fucking different. They're so opposed to one another. So what Yiska and I've, and hopefully I'm synthesizing this, you have to know who the fuck your audience is.
Dude, like there were some wholesome players in Overwatch League history. They were not the majority. Like
no.
Like someone like Linkser, I totally like get that the tone of the broadcast is so, like well adjusted to what's like a character like him, right?
Sure.
Bruh, that ain't Hottie. It's like,
to be fair, I also don't think Hottie's like a shit human being. I think he's like a little bit like, you know, he wants to like poke some fun, and he wants to like say some things, and he's a little loose-lipped, and he's gonna fucking say some shit.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And it's like, it's hard to, of course, oh, by the way, this is me playing. I'm of course not talking about that incident. I'm being cognizant of it while playing video games, okay? I wasn't referring to that. I was a terrible choice of example.
Yes, yes.
But you guys catch the drift, right? So,
yeah.
By the way, at this point, only the hardcore fans are still around to listen to this, so fair play, you're still around here. But, yeah, I think, like, you had to look at the player base, and then based on that, you create content that attracts the specific type of audience that these players can attract, right?
Yeah.
And it always went against the grain. Like, you could write a book about how different esports players are, right? Like, Dota, yeah, I explained, yeah. Like, CSGO is like,
they're fucking 30-year-old, like, semi-dads that are, like, chill, and they boot camp. They don't, like, sit there and scrim all day. They just fucking show up, like, a week before the event, and they fucking grind their fucking face off.
It has professionalized a little bit, but I think the most accurate thing to explain what a CSGO player is, like, they come up to you before an interview, they look you in the eyes, and they, like, shake your hands. You better fucking shake, like, with a tight one, because these guys have fucking bear paws. Their bicep is fucking curling, like you gotta dodge the vein, and they say bro with a rolling R. That's an esports CSGO player.
CS esports,
and that scene has culture around that, right?
Yeah.
That's like third party and like the broadcast have sort of like made use of that type of culture. Interviewing Faker, like that works because like everyone's like this. And League is big enough to have a wide variety of player personalities
100%,
that can attract that. You can be the best guy and very boring. You can be the best player of all time and share your book list and have that resonate, okay?
Yeah.
You cannot be seventh best guy and have that resonate.
Oh. And I think you have like a very astute point where it really dictates what is allowed based on the size of the esport. Because, yeah, I think you can be kind of milquetoast personality-wise and be like the seventh best player in the world in League of Legends and have a flourishing career. I think you'll be great. But I'm sorry, if you're playing Rocket League, which is bigger than I expect it to be and bigger than I expected it to really ever be, I don't know that you can be the 12th best player and just try to be the best. You know, you probably need to be some content-pilled fucking Zoomer. You've clipped most of your stream by playing, you know, Temple Run below like a fucking TikTok video or a YouTube short. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's the Rocket League crowd, but I'm just using that as like a loose example. Right.
Yeah, I think like Rocket League is basically like Kamin Corp is the only thing that really left an impression on me. They're loud and like.
Okay, yeah.
Like they're dickheads. Like it's almost like.
Like it's football culture again.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like the types of shit they were booing was crazy. Like, dude's crying like, oh my god, and it's just like, yeah, nope. Oh.
Boo.
But it's good. You're... like that's the type of emotion you want, right? Like,
yeah 100%.
You gotta have some decency. I think like booing faker is cringe, but...
booing faker is cringe. But I think that's fine. Like if that's what a fan base like feels and like they want to be like hype, not hyper, but like super tribal in that way, fine. You know, you want to chant like USA or like sing the French national anthem if Worlds was in France again, like I don't know that that's like weird, you know. If it's weird, then that's good too. That's gonna stir a lot of conversation and be great for selling the product, right? Because maybe you'll hate watch it, maybe you'll watch it but you'll mute it, but it galvanizes either side of the spectrum, right? That's kind of the idea. I think that's a good like wish list, like getting people to care again, experimentation. I'd love to see more communication from the developer for Overwatch esports. I know that this has been more of a general esports podcast, but I think a lot of this stuff can be applied and should be applied as we look to the future of what 2024 looks like for competitive Overwatch. Anything else kind of jumping out at you for? Any last wishes?
I mean, keep the game in a semi-competitive state and kind of care. Like, I don't expect much from you guys, but, like,
yeah,
we consider patch timing a little bit, at least. Feasibility, look at top 500 or whatnot, would be big, huge, large. Is there anything else? So the game needs to be stable. 2024, like Abbas said it a while ago. I think like I always agreed with that take, but 2024 will be like a proving ground for Overwatch. You gotta prove that esports can stand on its own. And I'm going to be honest, it's an uphill battle because we had a fucking half a billion and we couldn't make it work. Okay?
Yeah.
But I also have been part of esports scenes where the game is legitimately not good for a spectator experience, but you can absolutely meme it into absolute relevance, right? Just by based on the nature of how attractive the drama is. And I think we went a little bit too far back in the day, but I feel like, man, like the thing is, like you also need content creators from that generation that kind of vibes with it. Like it's like sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I can be that guy. No, I can't. I'm fucking old. Okay, like I can't. Fuck. What do you want me to do? You know, like I,
yeah,
probably just need to be the guy that asks the serious questions and, you know, the hard questions and the questions that provide accountability, not necessarily the content questions as much, right?
Sure.
Because it's hard. Like that, I'm just thinking it out loud and what's going on in my mind in terms of like strategy going forwards, right? And maybe that's wrong. Maybe maybe there's a way to do journalism. I was actually quite interested. Like, do you know who Puffyzilla is?
They do like YouTube like exposés, yeah?
Right. I felt like the way they were presenting, like how they were doing research and whatnot, was very risky and maybe a little far. Like, the maybe I also have a bias against reporting in the video format to that degree, which doesn't have really any validity. It's just like something that I feel. It's very hard.
From personal preference, yeah.
Because, like, I feel like you're committing so much by doing a video and not doing it like in the news presenter voice, which is like the objectivity voice of humanity, right?
Sure.
If you're just like a guy and you're trying to tell that story that's like really serious, like you will inject some tonality into that and you will commit an opinion that seems improper in those situations. I'm pretty old school in that regard. Like, I'd rather not have you know anything about my personal politics, beliefs. It's arguably no longer the matter to do that, right? So maybe you need to let go of a couple of norms, right? Maybe you gotta break a few eggs and figure out how to tell these stories in a compelling way, and you will lose some of the value that a really like cleanly written report will give you for like a more biased news piece. But like, I feel like it's just very hard to get people to care, and it's very hard to get people to care in time when still stuff can be done, right? And like an impassioned stuff, like, I'm not going. For instance, like when I read a Richard Lewis report, right? Especially on the recent stuff, like, he has a lot of opinion in there, in terms of like tonality of the pieces that he writes, right?
Yeah.
Part of me just thinks like, is that kosher? Maybe you gotta. Maybe he gets it, right? Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, these are like also considerations where you just gotta go with the flow. Maybe I'm the one swimming against the grain. Maybe I should be considering like what kind of, yeah, it's hard. But also, like, journalism is famously not a field you can publicly fail in, right?
Yeah, no. And that's kind of the weird blend that is out there right now, where it's influencerism, you know, it's very much like, to be successful, you need more of the influencer and less of the hard nosed journalist. I think there's space for those, but I think there's more an increasing, again, those lines are blurring between what an influencer is and what a journalist should do. You know, I think there are a lot of journalists who pose as influencers, and there's a lot of influencers that pose as journalists. And I think that
it's the thing. Like,
lends itself to that.
For me, in my mind, there's such a clear delineation, right?
Sure.
I would say there are content creators that are very good at doing journalistic work, I would say. But, like, to me, journalism is a priest class, okay?
Sure, yeah.
And I don't think that's fit anymore. I don't think you can do it. It's really hard.
It's hard. It's really hard. I think you have to be like so zealotrous in your priesthood, to play within that metaphor, that you are willing to forego a lot to be the best priest you can be, right? Like, it's tough. And it is really hard to not just go a different direction with it.
I think like one thing that Jacob does well, and I think that the problem is the monetization. Like, he almost, like, I think there is a world where the, like, a similarly to viewership, by the way, what we talked about, where it isn't just about numbers, but like, who do you reach? Like, if an executive looks at, you know, like a piece written by Jacob Wolf and gives it a lot of credence, that has such impact on esports, right? Much more so than like 10,000 viewers reading it, right? So But that's not factored in. That's not something that you can monetize unless you get that guy to pay, and then it's a conflict of interest. So there's, yeah, it's fundamentally broken. It's like, and that's why, like Patreon systems are all good and well, but if that could work, it just doesn't for most. And I hope it does for Jacob, because I think that's the only viable model to really go get out there without conflicts of interest. But yeah, it's hard. It's really hard out there.
It is. And that's it, like, that's completely ignoring the advent of AI and how difficult that's going to be to keep off the shelves, let's say. Yeah, really, really weird time to want to write and tell stories, because it's a tough world. There ain't no money, and the jobs are fleeting, because now everybody's trying to train language learning models to basically do the job.
Tell you what, Joe, I don't think I know a human that's less likely to be judged by an AI tracker to have written a text with AI, because they sure as fuck have no idea what not Sean Guy, fuck.
Oh yeah. It starts with an F.
Hold right.
Yeah.
I'm
safe.
Yeah, you're right.
Have I ever shared the story that one of my first editors asked me if I smoked copious amounts of weed?
I mean, it would very much make sense. Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense, and I thought that was one of the most like endearing, but also hilarious compliments that I've ever gotten. Is like, where do you fucking come up with this shit? Because this is fucking. This is like stoner level stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. It's like 4 a.m. and I just have to get it out of my head, and I hate it. So it's better that it's on paper than in my brain.
You were selling as well. Like, I feel like for a long time, now you're kind of off it. But like, before you looked at Fred Durst and went like, oh, that's my style.
Oh, in terms of it's not an active choice. It's just what's like around and comfortable.
To be fair,
I've had a lot of comments on that. Yeah,
you did not have the tattoos, but that's probably
the what
tattoos that Fred Durst had. Do you even know who Fred Durst is? Am I talking?
Yes, I know who Fred Durst is.
Okay. None of the Zoomers that listen to us know.
No, not at all. They're too busy watching you play Against the Storm. Not an ad, by the way. Again, I'm gonna make that very clear. This is not an ad. It just was. I thought it was funny in pre-show to be able to have Yiska play, and also. Which he did successfully. Kudos. Yiska fucking hung in there.
These rounds were so on the edge. Like, they should not be in this
club. You still were 60. You did win the first one, and it looks like you're going pretty well in the second run. So, credit to you. You fucking passed the test. Not an actual fucking old man gamer. He can still keep up. Multitasker.
I mean, the problem is it very much went against my filter. I feel like...
But that's to be expected.
Don't hate
right?
me. Don't hate me for anything I said. I was high on video games. Okay.
I can tell. You know, sometimes hot ones just unlocks a special blueprint on how to disable humans, and you know, playing games and just chatting shit.
It does not lend sure, itself. I'm not sure what will happen to my mental health if this has higher viewer retention than not. Other podcasts, because they're actually watching the footage. Okay,
leave a comment down below if A, you got this far, and B, you were watching more of the footage than listening to us ramble. Let us know, because if that's the case.
What the fuck? Okay,
we've been here for a little bit. Speaking of being here for a little bit, we are going to get out of here. I have to go to a WoW raid, and Yiska probably is going to continue to play this on his own. And you should tell him if he should stream it or not, because I feel like. He would still be...
It has Twitch interaction.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. Oh.
See? That's where you gotta monopolize the Discord. If you are interested in joining the community, let us know. There's, I think, links in the description and the show notes that are still active. If not, do let me know, and I can get that updated and get you guys an invite. Because, again, still kicking around. Overwatch esports might be a little dead, but our little community, tight-knit, playing games all the time, so... Do get in touch, get in contact, come join us, like and subscribe the YouTube and the podcaster feeds and all the influencer bullshit. Anything coming up for you, Yiska?
I'm only back on the 15th. I'm off right? till yeah. then. So not really. No.
Big chilling.
I'm actually, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm going for runs. That's what's coming up. I'm going for walks. That's what's coming up. I'm hoping that, like, I'm not getting blown away in my tiki hut. Like, sometimes I'm just like, let's take my phone and just record to camera a thought and then post on Twitter and everyone can cringe at me. Maybe I'll do something like that. Maybe if the moment strikes, like the muse strikes in the moment. Sometimes I'm a big fan of sunsets.
It's true.
So whenever that hits and I'm having a feel still about esports topics. But I also say, like, I'm looking at what's currently happening, and maybe your Twitter feed that is subscribed to me will soon also see more games pop up. We'll see. I'm studying up. I've committed to reading a lot. I've committed to doing a lot of shit next year, and yeah, it's not going to have any immediate effects, but in the long term, I'm hoping to get better.
There you go. All right, as we ring in 2024, hopefully we get some Overwatch news. Stay tuned. We will continue to provide you. We will be attempting to schedule another top 10 list that has been in the works for a little bit. We will not comment on what that will look like or when that will happen, but it is something we are actively working on. Do not fret. And yeah, until next week, until 329, we will see you next week and wish you the happiest of New Year's. So till then.
Peace.